Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
How many times have you heard an expert declare what the future is? An expert on stage in a black t-shirt about what's going to happen, alien invasion, flying cars, robots, and what they're going to do, perhaps the end of humanity. A recent example, of course, is artificial intelligence and where that's going to take civilization. Well, frequently we get the future wrong. We can get it very wrong. And Rutgers history professor Jamie Petruska has studied that and written about it. Her book is Looking Forward, Prediction and Uncertainty in Modern America. Professor Petruska, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You know, we love people who tell us what the future might be. We like to bet on the future, the market, politics, sports. Why do we love it?
We have this fascination with prediction, despite, but also because of the fact that the future is fundamentally unknowable. And I think, you know, all the examples you've mentioned are examples of how people have tried to predict the future throughout history, because humans just don't like uncertainty, and you know, governments, institutions, and markets don't like uncertainty either. But I think an even more important reason is that prediction offers reassurance by creating an illusion of control over an unpredictable future, while at the same time, sometimes influencing decision-making in the present. So prediction, in a way, is really about control.
Well, and even if it might be a predicted dark future, and one example is World War III is coming, of course, right? Nuclear Armageddon predicted throughout the Cold War. How pervasive was that in politics, in popular culture?
It was as pervasive as it could possibly be. And anticipating World War III during the early Cold War was something that happened in top secret classified briefings, but it also played out in popular culture. I actually found a copy of a magazine in my grandparents' house. It was Collier's magazine, did a special issue in 1951, and it was called Preview of the War We Do Not Want. And so the magazine was set in the future of 1960, and it was devoted to detailed coverage of a fictional World War III, in which the U.S. and the Soviet Union had unleashed nuclear weapons on each other. And the magazine reported the nuclear war as though it had actually happened.
And of course, we continue to have streaming series, movies, books about a post-apocalyptic future. How do you explain that? I mean, this is a prediction of something that's really bad.
I think part of it is, of course, the allure of utopian and dystopian futures that have a long history in literature and visual culture. I think another function that these highly detailed depictions of an apocalypse, which of course are quite terrifying, play a role in ensuring that that kind of war never happens.
Right, potentially kind of scaring us into doing something, into action. And then, of course, there's technology. Right back in the 90s, this thing called the internet came along. A lot of people, I gather, at the time were poo-pooing it. Why? And what did they, in retrospect, get wrong?
Right. So there are a lot of these infamously wrong predictions about the internet. And in the mid-1990s, there were a number of high-profile predictions about the internet potentially collapsing in 1996. In 1997, Popular Mechanics ran a cover story on the death of the internet, said there were just so many people signing on, there was so much data that it was essentially gridlocked. And so people would begin to turn away from it and not bother going online anymore. And I think what's so interesting is that for most of the major innovations in telecommunications, telegraph, telephone, television, the computer, the internet, you can go back through the historical record and find similar predictions claiming that this will be just a passing fad. And you can also find predictions celebrating the transformative potential of those technologies.
Which brings us to today and the question of artificial intelligence. As a historian, what have you learned about this hype cycle surrounding other technologies and how that may inform our conversation about AI going forward?
We've been in many hype cycles before, and I think it's important to think about what's driving the hype and the predictions about what a particular technology will do in terms of transforming the future. And so in previous moments in history, I think it's important, you know, who is making this kind of prediction about a particular technology? What do they want to happen or not happen? Who stands to benefit or profit? Yeah. And what are the political, ideological, and cultural assumptions in a particular vision of the future? Because, you know, we use the phrase the future, but in a way, it's a misnomer. There's not a single experience of the future that is the same for everyone. And so it's important to remember in the context of AI, context of climate crisis, that people will experience different futures depending on where they live.
And that surely gets reflected in who's the loudest voice at different points in the hype cycle.
Exactly.
Rutgers historian Jamie Petruska is the author of Looking Forward, Prediction and Uncertainty in Modern America. Jamie, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. My pleasure.